This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 29th of August 2015 on Monocle 24.
Global lifestyle trends, travel, technology, culture, and more with a media man who likes to have his finger on the pulse, a plethora of indie publishing in Hamburg, and a ravishing review of a favorite film journal. Practical advice, so prick up your ears for all the best in print today on The Stack. Ahead on the program, we'll be savoring the magazine selections of one industry expert and print aficionado in studio, and we'll be hearing from Hamburg, where Germany's growing independent magazine industry is gathered for its annual jamboree.
We are trying to raise the question on how independent publishing can become a role model for working and living, and how to make publishing even more sustainable, keeping indie mags alive for more than just a couple of years.
Then we'll be finding out why film title Little White Lies gets a glowing 5-star review from one Monocle critic.
The cover is, again, very, very distinctive. It sort of ties in with the branding and the look and feel of Tomorrowland, the movie. But what it really taps into is this wonderful retro idea of what the future might hold.
All that coming up and plenty more besides today on The Stack, Monocle's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brilla, here in Studio 2 on a Saturday at Midori House in London. We've got a lot to get through over the next 29 minutes or so, so let's meet our first guest. William Rowe is the founder and CEO of Protein, a multidisciplinary media network focusing on trends, lifestyle, and the world's cultural phenomena. Part of his repertoire is the Starkly Simple Protein Journal, which is sold worldwide and is now on its 16th issue, which is focused and titled The Age Report. Clutching that title and many more besides. William is sitting next to me here in Studio 2. Welcome, William. Now, I think a lot of people who've been to I shouldn't just say specialist newsstands, because you can also go to, I think, some major chains, maybe not too many, and you will find Protein as well. So I'm sure to many, it exists as a very nice title and one which, of course, occupies a very specific part of the marketplace. But maybe if we could just take a step back or two and tell us a little bit about the broader business. There are a lot of companies who are in the intelligence space, who are doing agencies, also have magazines as well. But your elevator pitch as to how Protein's a little bit different, perhaps.
Sure. Well, thanks for the introduction. Very happy to be here. I've been running Protein now 17 years. And right from the beginning, our world is about people, understanding them, how to connect with them. And ultimately, what that translates in terms of the modern business world is now audiences. So we are structured very simply into three divisions. A publishing business, which we have our journal, we have our reports, we have our surveys, we have our daily feed. We then, behind that, have an agency business, which provides insight, strategy, creative production services for the brands. And then our third business is our network. So we represent about 150 publishers globally to help activate campaigns for them on digital, experiential, content-led, talent-led, social-led programs. So that, as a business, is what we do, how we're structured. But specifically for the journal, we're issue 16 now. It started very much as, well, in terms of the definition of what a journal is. We were publishing online, as we have done since 1997. And it was just a really nice snapshot of the best content that we found online. So we actually originally launched it with Newspaper Club as a newspaper format, which was great. It's cheap, it's accessible, but it was also disposable. And we felt that the content that we were putting together should have had a slightly longer shelf life than what newspaper stock sort of represents. So we relaunched it last year in its current format, which is a bit more higher quality, but very much around this format of sort of culture and insight. So in the middle of each publication, we have our reports, mm-hmm. and that is really our point of difference from other publications, other agencies, other businesses, and other brands out there.
How important is the print piece for you? As you said, you wanted something which was a bit longer lasting. But when we see perhaps so many people also in your space who put so much emphasis on their daily feed, obviously just, you know, driving digital traffic in general, do you treat this as a little bit of a living billboard that sits on newsstands as a brand extension, or is there something about the tangible component of this which is still important as a business winner to your broader, your broader interests as much as just engaging an end consumer?
It's a bit of both. Sure, it's a marketing exercise for us in terms of people discovering our brand, our business in the right location. So we've been very selective about even when you find it. So in terms of newsstand, it's only on travel. In terms of partnerships, it's in a very carefully selected range of hotels, members clubs, airport lounges. And so for us, it's critical to make sure the right people are seeing it. So yeah, from a marketing perspective, hugely important. But from a tangibility perspective, it's, as mentioned, from shifting from newspaper club to 100 DSM, nice cover, spot foil finishes, it's the quality and the longevity. That's what's super important.
How do you staff it? I'm interested because I think going back to lots of agencies have, of course, their news gathering arm or their intelligence division, whatever you want to call it. But I'm wondering, when you're sitting down with partners, clients, etc., the people who are putting their cards down around the table from your side of the business, where are you drawing them from?
We've coined a term, and I'm not sure if I can take credit for it, but I'm going to, insight journalism, because we're sitting between the world of consumer insight and trends, but within cultural influences in terms of actually who are these people that are really shaping and defining this world. And all we are is a conduit. We're a conduit for the brands. We're a conduit for our publishers to really help and understand this. So really, in terms of our team, we have an editorial team that is made up very much looking after, or their outlook is very much more on culture. Mm. And then we have an insight team, which is very much sort of focused around the implications of that for brands. Mm. And that is the nature of the publication, very simply. The insight piece in the middle is much more brand focused and with a much more tangible sort of takeaway, whereas what's wrapped around it is much more cultural, and we've got Nick Knight or Holly Herndon like on the cover, which are much more culturally relevant names.
Just before we go away for a short break, we're going to be heading to Hamburg in a second. Just tell us the age report, if you have to distill it, what's it delivering?
It's delivering a concise roundup of basically behaviors and attitudes of five different generations, from boomers to the Gen Z. We ran a qualitative survey across our network to really help understand these behaviors and attitudes. And it's a snapshot of those five different generations. Mm.
And a headline from each of them then.
From each of them.
To put you on the spot.
Certainly from the boomers, hugely influential, massively important, hugely undervalued in terms of just...
spending power, everything.
Power. And all the way through to the Gen Z, as I think we all know, massively important in terms of their behaviors and their future potentials.
But don't look at them to influence your bottom line just today.
Not yet.
At least that's my view. But anyway, maybe yours as well. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. William Rose, my guest today from Protein. We're going to head to the Hanseatic city of Hamburg after this.
Monocle's unrivaled network of editors and correspondents around the world bring you a brilliant new collection of books, the Monocle Travel Guides. Speaking in an informed but informal way about everything from architecture to art, late night bars to early morning markets, the Monocle Travel Guides mix the classic with the contemporary, going beyond the conventional and revealing the hidden spots that cities have to offer. Published by Gestalten, these travel guides are for people who want to get the most out of their stay, however short, and feel like locals rather than tourists in the world's great cities. These series kicks off with London and New York, available now in Monocle shops, at monocle.com, and in all good bookstores. And watch out for Hong Kong and Tokyo on the way soon. The Monocle Travel Guides. Cities are fun. Let's explore.
You're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 on a Saturday here in Studio 2. My guest today, of course, is William Rowe from Protein Journal. We're going to cross the North Sea now, head to Germany, to the media capital. At least the print media capital anyway, of the Federal Republic. This weekend, Hamburg hosts IndieCon 2015, a conference devoted to the world of independent magazines. The festival has a great lineup with some of the best magazine editors and other people involved in the print industry, from our friends, of course, Mag Culture's Jeremy Leslie, to Kai Brach from Offscreen Magazine. Our Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Malte Brenneisen, one of the six people behind IndieCon.
Tell us a bit more about the idea for the conference. I believe it's the second one this year.
Well, yeah, it's like the second issue this year. And we started in our little editorial office and agency called Die Brüder, which is in English, the brothers, and just started collecting IndieMacs from the German-speaking countries like a couple years ago. And therefore, we used our blog indiemacs.de as like an archive with publication details for at least a couple hundred titles. And as this platform and our communication with the social media grew up, at least more and more publishers contacted us with more or less with the same questions like, do you guys know a distributor or a printer, an art worker? What do you think of our new cover? Or what about advertising anyway? And so on and so on. And the only thing we did was linking those questions to experts, friends and family from our network. And then we thought, why not bringing these guys and their questions together at an event like the festival or a conference? And that's how we came to the first IndieCon last year.
You know, here at the Stack, we always talk about the business models for those independent magazines. I wonder if this is perhaps one of the topics of your conference as well, because, you know, how do they make money out of it as well? Is it through advertising or just subscription?
Well, to be honest, in 2014, like with the first issue of the IndieCon, we were total greenhorns in this whole field. And we just raised the basic conference question of what is indie? And we got a couple answers in order to distribution, customer relationship management, and of course topics and design. But there was like no general answer to this specific question of what is indie. I think it's rather the very specific way of the publishers themselves. See, for instance, there's Tristan Rogers, he's from Hamburg as well, and he does a magazine for redheads called MC1R, which is the name for the Genuine, for the red hair. And as far as I know, this guy is now visiting the red hair days in UK or the red hair days in the Netherlands to actually get new distribution channels and to get in touch with those peoples. And meanwhile, he is red hair as well. So that's pretty easy. He's really related. He's very much linked to his readership. And this is what makes his product so authentic, which is, I think, very indie.
I just want a final question here about the conference. I mean, if I'm in Hamburg for the weekend, which kind of guests do you have for us this year?
Actually, I'm very much looking forward to hearing the keynote of Ibrahim Nehme. He is the founder of The Outpost from Beirut in Lebanon. He describes this magazine as a magazine about possibilities in an almost impossible country. And he might have some very special answers to the question of what indie really is. So that could be very interesting. And also, we have Ryan Fitzgibbon's magazine, Hello Mister, from Brooklyn, New York, as you might know, a magazine about the gay community and the gay lifestyle. He could, of course, tell us some good things about new design. And moreover, we are trying to raise the question on how independent publishing can become a role model for working and living, and how to make publishing even more sustainable, keeping IndieMacs alive for more than just a couple of years.
That was our Fernando Augusto Pacheco speaking to Malte Brenneisen, who sounded like he was in a very large container terminal in Hamburg. He's one of the organizers of IndieCon, Independent Magazine Conference, which is taking place in Hamburg this weekend. It was interesting listening to the last bit when he was talking about how maybe, you know, indie print can become this interesting sort of intersection between sort of, you know, living and working. And you said you're working on something on slow media coming up right now. The slow media movement that we see at the moment, do you think, you know, part of that is also about a downshift out of corporate life slightly as well, or at least traditional, you know, media corporate life? And so people who are sitting around saying, you know, maybe I don't want to bring home 250,000 euros, dollars, pounds a year. I'm happy to make 55 or 60,000, but I'm going to do it on my terms.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And actually, one of our reports on work, we asked that specific question just in terms of the general approach to work, the workplace, your career, and your incentives and your priorities. Mm. And that, well, the two points there were a hugely high proportion were much more interested in what we sort of term portfolio careers, which are 1-2 year jobs rather than one job for 20 years. Mm. And also within that, just the priority of experience over salary, which really plays into, I think, this generation's attitude to why do they even go to work? Mm. What am I there to do? What am I there to learn? Rather than how much money can I make? And I think there is clear parallels with the slow movement. I mean, the slow movement has been in food for a number of years, but we're really seeing, even in our recent survey, just in terms of new platforms, predominantly digital, which are specializing in long form media, new news services that are very much not following 24-hour rolling news, bite-sized sensationalism, but much more in-depth, much more sort of documentary, observational reporting that are all being delivered digitally. And then alongside like the off-screen, which they mentioned, which are really celebrating that movement. Mm. I think, yeah, it's definitely of the time in terms of this approach.
We'll look forward to when that volume comes out. You brought a number of things in. I'm always happy when someone walks into the studio with double tote bags, which is great to see. We've done a quick edit because we don't actually have too much time. I wanted to, one of the first things you pulled out was a special and a tie-up that you've done with Document for Timberland. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is just something that we didn't produce this, but we tell anybody who wants a good example of a branded collaboration, Document Journal based out of New York, massively credible, very broad in their coverage, have done a partnership with Timberland. And if you'd explain that to anybody, they'll be like, yeah, another branded piece. But for us, the way that it's produced, the quality of the output, the contributors, the photography, the story of just really what Timberland means to a hugely broad generation or generations of people. So it's very personal, it's very authentic, and from a brand perspective, those are the checkpoints that you would always look for. So for us, and we do a lot of work with the brands, as I know you guys do here, but it just is a great example of a successful collaboration.
Yeah, and it's just to take people through it, slightly A5 in size. So in many ways, sort of think reflecting that sort of contemporary trim size that you see on, certainly on the shelves of many a good bookshop. But what's wonderful about it is it's the story of Timberland. And I just like as soon as I open it up, you have the Paninato and you're taken back to late 70s, 1980s Italy, which is great, but with an accompanying story around it, but also just a great modern reportage. And then a lot of, wonderful personal stories told throughout. But I think, interesting to see the depth of something like that can be delivered quite beautifully as well.
Sure.
I'm going to give you, you've still got about three or four magazines here, but you've only got time for one more. So
I'm going to go with Swallow. Swallow magazine, and this issue specifically is the Scratch and Sniff issue, which for being a food magazine about Mexico, I think checks quite a lot of boxes. Just a fantastic publication, both in terms of the quality of the output, the articles, and also the topic. And to me, best typifies what is possible in print that is definitely not possible in digital. And James, who edits it and puts it together, it's definitely a labor of love for him. I remember having a conversation with him about the company, which I think there's only one or two remaining in the world that can actually create the Scratch and Sniff paper, which was an incredible challenge, and also on what page they go so they don't bleed into other pages. But again, it's the experience of it. It's the weight, it's the paper stock, it's the combination of all these different elements that to me, as I said, is the best example of an independent publication today.
An outstanding inside back cover as well. Take it back. Reasons to bring a bigger bag. William Rowe from Protein. We have to leave it there. It'd be great to have you come back, particularly to maybe open up a big broader discussion on all things related to slow media. The new issue of Protein is out, The Age Report, looking at, five different sectors, the impact on the market, and much more beyond. Very good to see you.
Thank you very much.
We are going away for a short break. After that, we are going to be talking about this week's In Praise Of. Stay with us.
Do you have dreams of running your own business? Or do you just wish you had a nicer desk? Well, you require the September issue of Monocle that comes with an entrepreneurial dusting of good advice, inspiring stories, and contacts for better office furniture. And we have more.
In culture, we take the temperature of Brazil's largest media company, Globo, as things hot up. It's celebrating its 50th birthday ahead of the Rio Olympics and accusations of monopoly.
In the design pages, we enlist the help of four of our favourite architects to kit out the office of startups throughout their life cycle.
In the edit section, we sip cider in the Big Apple, unearth Byron Bay's growing food scene, and travel to the latest hotel openings from Barcelona to Perth.
The September issue of Monocle is on sale now. Get your copy at any good newsstand or do the wise thing. Become a subscriber at monocle.com.
You're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Burley. Now it's time for that regular feature of the show where one of our Midori House editors or contributors speaks in praise of a favorite newsstand staple. This week, it's the turn of Monocle 24 producer Ben Rylan, who has chosen to exult in the joys of cult film journal Little White Lies.
Well, the magazine I'd like to talk about is Little White Lies. It is one of the major movie magazines for the current generation. And what I really love about Little White Lies is that the cover isn't just an eye-catching way in which to attract people at first glance. The theme actually continues right throughout the entire issue. I'd really like to talk about my favourite issue, which is the recent May-June issue of Little White Lies, which is all based around the Disney movie Tomorrowland, starring George Clooney. Now, the cover is, of course, again, very, very distinctive. It sort of ties in with the branding and the look and feel of Tomorrowland, the movie. But what it really taps into is this wonderful retro idea of what the future might hold. A very distinctive 1950s feel, which recalls the original Tomorrowland in the real-life Disneyland.
You wanted to see Tomorrowland. Here it comes.
One interesting part of the way in which they cover film in this classic issue, as I would call it here, is that they sort of merge the new trends to do with the world of movies with some really, really interesting historical anecdotes. So there's one really fantastic write-up here about the Disney movie 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. It was a live-action movie by director Richard Fleischer. And it's one of those wonderful futuristic films that feels incredibly dated today, but in a very, very charming way. It's a wonderful write-up about that film. And it also picks up on some of the very, very serious elements of the film, which is very unusual when you think about what Disney and the Disney universe is known for, specifically picking up on the suicidal tendencies of the main character inside the submarine. My absolute favourite part of this issue is a bit of a centrefold here. So on one page, with a yellow colour scheme, it's covering the most strange examples of film history. So it talks about here the Jimmy Stewart Museum, which is in the town of Indiana in Pennsylvania. Now, it was on the verge of permanent closure back in 2013 when it was saved by a windfall of spontaneous donations, which of course is quite interesting when compared to the plot of Jimmy Stewart's most famous film, It's a Wonderful Life. And it also goes through a few other people here who have their own monuments around the USA. And it ends with a bit of a discussion here about Theda Bara. Today, Theda Bara isn't really known by anyone at all. But Theda Bara was actually, at one point in film history, the most famous woman in the world. She was possibly Hollywood's first female movie star back in the early 1900s, kind of bridging that gap between the time when films specifically didn't even have stars at all. You wouldn't actually see the name of an actor in the opening credits of a film because film studios were afraid that if they created famous people, then famous people would have all of the power. And they were probably right about that.
That was our Ben Rylan speaking there in praise of the film journal Little White Lies. After this very, very quick break, our David Pleasant is going to be here to talk about a little project we're hatching over the coming weeks.
How do you write a biography? Are we all curators today? Who still makes fanzines? And how close are fact and fiction? These are some of the questions constantly puzzling us here at Monocle. So each week on our culture show, we spin the globe to find the very best writers, musicians, artists, gallerists, filmmakers, commentators, and even mudlarks to debunk these cultural mysteries. Tune in to Culture with me, Robert Bound, every Monday at 1900 UK time, where all will be revealed.
You
You're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24. We're just approaching the end of the program, and our David Pleasant is in studio. He's almost sort of run in like a breathless young cub reporter with a bit of breaking news. Now, some people might have already seen something off of the news wires probably over the last 24 hours or so, but we're going to be taking this program into a bit more of a different type of live format. Tell us about it, Mr. Pleasant.
Very exciting, Tyler. In a month from now, we are going to have the Stack Live event. So that's a seminar.
Yeah.
All listeners welcome to Midori House to join in the recording of an hour-long special of the show, which you, Tyler, will be hosting.
Well, I'm actually, is it recorded, or is it going to be live? I think it's going to be live, isn't it?
It is
or are
live.
We recording? No, it's going to be live.
No, it's live.
It's live.
Live,
no,
exactly. Live.
So, yeah,
it's
it'll be recorded, of course, for posterity. But
exactly.
Yes, and you've said, yes, you know, all welcome, but we don't have a Wembley-sized space. So no. It's going to be available for about 70, we could probably squeeze 80 in, right? It'll be cozy.
Exactly, it'll be
September,
cozy.
September should be, right?
Exactly.
Late September.
Nice and snug.
Yeah.
Tickets are on sale now. You
yep.
can go to the Stack page of our website. Mm-hmm. We've got a real fan base. I get emails from listeners. So this is your chance to come to London and listen in.
And we've been talking about really sort of the evolution of the program, the types of guests. And I think you've got quite a strong lineup. We've got Olivier Royon, who's coming from Paris Match. I mean, I think one of the most respected editors at the helm of course, one of the most recognized magazine brands anywhere
it
in the world.
It is the quintessential magazine.
Yeah, well, you think about the weeklies. So I think he's going to be exciting. We've also got our friends from, at least one of our friends from Fantastic Man is going to be here, correct?
Gert Jonkers
yeah.
is coming from Amsterdam.
Yeah, so I think we've got the really sort of the camp of the, not just the indie publisher, but I think, you know, really one of the titles, which I think probably upended, you know, a huge part of the market, certainly on the men's side. And then I guess we've got Ian Birch, familiar voice in this program. I mean, really one of, you know, the proper statesmen who goes back to the days of course, teen weeklies, etc. So I think it's going to be a really nice lineup. One that we want to encourage as well, you know, people who are going to travel to London for this, that there'll also be a Q&A session as well. So we're going to have a real sort of liveliness. We want to make this program, you know, completely interactive in sort of the very live, intimate space as well. And then it doesn't end there, though, does it?
No, it's a whole itinerary, Tyler, because then, as you have talked about and it's becoming public, we are opening a retail concept, a kiosk cafe, where people can see the very best in magazine distribution, as well as having a really nice coffee. So that's opening soon.
Yeah, so everyone, we wrap up. Everyone, of course, will be fed and watered and get a little treat when they come here, and then they can sort of truck over a kilometre away over towards Paddington, and everyone will, of course, be sort of touring that space as well. So as you said, you can register, buy a ticket on our site, but we look forward to seeing people in about a month's time.
That's right, 26th, put it in your diaries. You can't say we didn't tell you.
No, absolutely. That was David Pleasant, our studio manager, and it's time to say goodbye as well. Claire Urban, of course, was our fine lady behind the controls, and that is the end of this 157th edition of The Stack. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Of course, we are here every single Saturday, sometimes in Studio 2, sometimes in Studio 1. Of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or iTunes. But for me, Tyler Perley, goodbye.